Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And by the way, you can post to our Facebook group or to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. What have you learned about the real world from the Star Trek world? We're getting some interesting answers to the question already on Facebook. Now we have a comments page open for that. And we'll talk about it with this prequel opening and getting a lot of audience for sure over its first weekend and getting a lot of good reviews, too, coming up later this hour. But right now, we have seen how President Obama is using the economic crisis to push forward the progressive agenda that he ran on before the crisis hit in the fall. Universal health care, sustainable energy, education reform. We wonder, can the same thing be done in New York in a mayoral election year? A conference in the city on Thursday will ask, even with a budget crunch, or maybe because of it, whether this might be the moment for higher wages for working New Yorkers, for more sustainable development and better affordable housing policies. The conference will be called One City, One Future. And we have three participants with us who will be in the One City, One Future conference on Thursday. Hyung Yoon, Executive Director of the group Organizing Asian Communities. Mike Fishman, President of Local 32BJ of the Employees International Union. That's the union that represents workers in buildings, from janitors to doormen, and Catherine Wild, President and CEO of the Partnership for New York City, which represents big businesses in the city. Catherine, Mike, Hyung, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you. Thanks,
Brian. Good morning, Brian.
And Hyung Yoon, let me start with you. The conference will hit eternal themes in New York, like creating living wage jobs and affordable housing. How much does that still apply when every kind of job is disappearing and the price of housing is actually going down?
I actually think it's much more critical that we need to talk about increasing wages and creating affordable housing precisely because of the economic conditions that we face today. I think there's been, as the Department of Labor released the unemployment rates, the number is it's extremely high, and I think that what we don't see in the numbers in the mainstream media is the impact on the low-wage communities of color in New York City. So as the workers in the financial district and the bank institutions lose their jobs, there's inevitable impact on those workers who work in service industries. So, for example, if you lose jobs in a financial institution, the workers who are cleaning their home, cleaning the offices, taking care of their children, will also be impacted by the economic recession. So the calling for increased wages, higher labor standards, and creation of affordable housing is that much more critical at this point.
Catherine Wild, let me get you on that. What about the living wage movement and income disparity? We live in a time right now of declining wages. Do you agree with Hyung? Do you see a policy response to that at the city level that might make sense right now without creating even more unemployment?
Well, the truth is, this is a national problem. It isn't. It isn't something that the city by itself can deal with. Unfortunately,
but let me jump in for a minute, because one of the things in the One City, One Future report that this conference is based on is that we can learn from what other cities are doing, and they single out San Francisco as a city that actually has now a city living wage, city minimum wage.
Well, I'm not sure what the income discrepancy numbers are in San Francisco, but I would suspect they're significant. I think certainly we believe that there are times when New York can act on its own. We did so when we supported the effort to successfully increase the state minimum wage a couple of years ago, and that was something that our organization got behind and joined with labor in pushing for that to happen. Today, the issues facing facing this country on an economic basis are pretty overwhelming. And so we've got to think about our policies in a national context. In some cases, I think the work that has been done on the report, One City, One Future, is looking at issues that are national in nature, the affordable housing issue, the building a green economy issue, and some of the other competitiveness issues. But I think that in New York City, what we have to be focused on is how we work together to create a better atmosphere. No one is more dissatisfied than the status quo today than the business community, believe me. So I think there's a real opportunity for a solid conversation, but it's not going to be a simple process where we as a city can ignore what's going on nationally and do it on our own.
And Mike Fishman from 32BJ, which represents building workers, what about wage disparity from your point of view? New York has had some of the biggest wage disparities in the world between rich and poor, and even between rich and average. But we now see the wealth draining from so much of Wall Street and the vast amounts of tax revenue lost as a result to support public functions. Do you feel any differently today about the pay of the very rich in New York now that we're feeling the effects of its loss? And I'm sure this goes to tips that get paid to doormen and janitors and porters and so on as well.
Yeah, everybody is suffering. But I do think that we have to look at it in the big context, that it's not just what's happening today. It's clear that the economic policies that we've pursued for the last 30 years have brought us to this point, and that we need a national solution, but we also need solutions at the city level, and to take the steps at the city level that we can. Working people in the city here, but everywhere, have lost buying power over the last 30 years, and we have to do something to change that. And I think President Obama has really set the tone, saying that the best way to get the economy back on track is to get money in the hands of consumers, and the best way to do that is to set decent wages. And so while business in many cases says we have to lower the wages in an economic recession, I think we've learned that that's a bad policy and that we have to change the policy and use every incentive that the city has to create a good, stable wage base for workers. And in New York City, 2 million people are living in poverty. Half of them, 1 million people, are working in poverty. They work a full-time job and still live in poverty. And one out of four jobs are affected either directly or indirectly by the financial power of the city. And the city could make policies that would create a decent, stable wage base for all workers in the city and help to address that income disparity. And that's what this conference is really about, is changing the nature of the way we think about our economy in the city.
Listeners, is the recession an opportunity to think about the way we change, to change the way we think about the economy in New York City? Call in. Has it changed your thinking? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Is the recession an opportunity to change the way we think about the economy in New York City? And if so, how has it changed your thinking? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a response to that question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we talk with three participants in the One City, One Future conference coming up on Thursday. Hae-young Yoon, executive director of CAAV, also known as Organizing Asian Communities, Mike Fishman, president of Local 32BJ, and Catherine Wild, president and CEO of the Business Group Partnership for New York City. 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. What about housing? Hae-young, I see in the report that came out on this what looked like old statistics about the loss of affordable housing, and I don't mean old, but that reflect trends over quite a few years, the loss of affordable housing in New York City and housing costs becoming out of reach to so many New Yorkers. Do you see the economic downturn as in some way a good thing because it's making housing more affordable?
There may be. I do think that in New York City we began to see the slowing down of development, and I think with the housing market bubble bursting, we are seeing less and less of people buying homes. But I think that that has not actually translated to what's happening in the rental market. In fact, because less and less people are buying, they're renting more, which has now created a condition where landlords and private developers are either keeping or increasing rental. So I think that even despite what's happening in the recession and people are losing jobs, the rental payment is at the same rate or it's going to increase for the rent-stabilized units. So I do think that there is a shift and we have to think about a different way to respond to this particular political moment and economic conditions. I think very recently the City Council Speaker Quinn actually said that we should be thinking about freezing rental increase as the rent guideline boards will be meeting in June. So I do think that we have to be thinking about, in this difficult, harsh times, how do we meet the needs of every New Yorker? And majority, as I think I agree with Mike, that the wage disparity is incredible. And in terms of the number of people living at the at or below poverty level in New York City is tremendous.
Catherine, what about housing? We've talked about this before in another context, about whether the housing decline, the housing bubble bursting, might actually be a silver lining, at least for some people, with respect to the New York economy, and might make living in New York more affordable over the long term because housing has been, such a crunch in this particular city. How do you see that today?
Well, the overheated housing market was created a huge pressure on rents, upward pressure. The housing market today is extremely weak. Home sales are, in terms of the sales activity, are down 57% in Brooklyn, 54% in Queens, 48% in Manhattan. So you've got much less housing activity, and as a result, drop off in development activity. But that is not really a good thing for our economy. And so far, prices and rents have not followed. I think over time they will soften and weaken. But thus far, what we've really seen is the activity is down, development is down, and that ends up being bad news for our economy. So we have to figure out how to restore a balance that increases the production of housing across the board, and particularly of affordable housing. It's not good when development comes to a halt.
And Mike Fishman, are some of your workers in 32BJ thinking, gosh, maybe now I can actually afford to live in some of these buildings that I work in?
Well, they might be saying they're more affordable, but they might not be saying it's time to buy, for the same reason that everybody else is afraid, that they're afraid they might lose their job. And so while the prices may be coming down in the rental market or even the condo and co-op market, it's very hard for people to take advantage of it. They're more afraid for their job. There's less money available for financing. And so, again, I think we have to look at it not just as this snapshot, but in the long run, and I think Kathy said it, that we need to make a long-term structural plan to have low-income housing and middle-income housing that's available on a long-term basis, not that it becomes available in a recession when people are actually losing their jobs and thinking that they may lose their job. So I don't think this is that opportunity to help the city become more affordable. Unless we do something structural and take this crisis as what it is, a signal we should do something different, we'll just face the same issue in a couple of years when the economy starts to recover.
Tim in Baldwin, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim. Tim, are you there?
Hello?
Tim, the phone line's too bad. We're going to have to get back to you. Let's try Fred in Manhattan. Fred, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Actually, this question is really a
gentlemen,
dilemma.
Gentlemen and ladies, I will point out, but go ahead, Fred.
Okay, gentlemen and ladies. This question is really a dilemma because on the one hand, and I must say personally I'm for a living wage. I don't think what they talk about is really a living wage. It really needs to be higher in this city. But on the other hand, you have employers who always say, if you raise the lower level of employment wages, we're going to leave the city because we can get, and quote-unquote, illegal immigrants to work for less than what anybody else will work for. Therefore, we want to maintain our profit structure. And lastly, New York City, of course, is what you might call, quote-unquote, an open city. It does not round up illegal immigrants. It does not try and profess the law in order to solve that problem.
You're
so
saying
how do you get away from that dilemma?
You're saying that the profusion of illegal immigrants in New York City is bringing down wages?
Oh, no question about
and
it.
And we need to deal with that. Mike Fishman from Fishman from 32BJ, does your union see that as an issue?
We see immigration as an issue as a whole, and that this country needs workers, and workers have come to this country from other countries looking for a new life, and we should give them a place where they can work without being under the specter of somebody raiding them and sending them, deporting them back to their country. So we're very much for immigration reform that would find a path to legalization, and that the workers who are here, whether they're from another country or from this country, born here, should have an opportunity to have decent wages. And so whether they're immigrants coming in who are willing to work for less, we want to enlist their help in raising a living wage in the city and making it work. And certainly employers are always looking for somebody to work less, whether they're coming from another country or another part of the country. And we need to address that together. And at one time, we had a social compact in this city that recognized that immigrants were really part of the fabric and that we needed to have a base that people could survive in this city. And we need to turn the clock back a little bit on that and refine that balance that we had in the city where workers made a decent wage.
I think, too, responsible employers are absolutely looking for talent from all sources in this global economy, and they are looking at the labor pool as one that includes a mix of domestic and international talent. We've got to be investing in education, workforce development, be more competitive on the domestic side. But certainly we have to keep standards and wages high for everybody. We don't want to be a city, and we never have been a city, I don't believe, where employers, responsible employers, took advantage of immigrant labor to lowball wages. Our history in New York is much better treatment of immigrants than that.
In fact, here is Mary Beth in Red Bank, who I think will say she's hired a lot of undocumented immigrants. Right, Mary Beth?
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that I know that it's a common perception that somehow immigrants are pulling down the labor, the wages for, maybe more basic laborers. But in my experience, and I built an organic farm in Sagaponack, New York, and have done various other work where I've hired sometimes immigrant labor. But frankly, it was because those are the only people who were really willing to do the work, and they were not willing to work for less than what they were well aware was the going wage. I mean, if it was $15 an hour, well, it was $15 an hour, and I paid them the same wage that I would have paid anyone else. The difference that I found was that it was only certain people who would do the kind of work that I needed done. It really wasn't a matter of how much I paid them. I had to pay them the going rate. It was a matter of who was available to perform that work.
Hey, Young Yoon, how much do you agree with that analysis of the labor market?
So I would add a couple of things. One is that it's not the workers who are driving down the wage. It's the employers who are making certain choices to pay below minimum wage or create exploitive working conditions. And I think this is precisely the reason why we need certain labor standards in different industries. And I think the One City, One Future platform actually calls for very specific passage of legislation, including domestic workers' bill of rights in New York State, that would set labor standards so that there is protection that all workers are entitled to, so that that prevents employers from, I mean, the reality is that employers will always create opportunities to exploit workers, but so that's the reason why we need to set standards, so that there's a certain standard that we will all try to comply with.
I was going to say that I think what we have to remind ourselves is we need private sector employers, and we have to figure out how to work together. New York has always been famous for the meritocracy, the fact that talent could rise, talent could come here from all over the world and be successful. Our productivity is legend of our workforce at all levels of the workplace. We're known to get more done faster on a more efficient basis, and all that justifies high standards, high salaries, and relatively speaking, that's what we have and we have to continue to work for in New York.
Brian, if I could just jump in on this one second.
Go ahead.
I just want to bring us back to the One City, One Future, that this blueprint put together by all the groups in the city who have a vision for the future that's a little different than what we've had is really all of us saying we're at a crisis, a moment of crisis in time. It's an opportunity for us to take a look at what we've been doing and change things so that we meet the needs of the people of the city in a different way, and that government use its policies to balance out the power and the needs of the different sectors. So we certainly need private sector employment. We certainly need business to be successful, but we also need to meet the needs of the people who live in the city, the working people, and that government plays a critical role in balancing out those needs. I think that a partnership is needed between government, business, and workers and working people that balances out all those needs together. And the blueprint is actually a very good overview of the kinds of things that could be done to use the power of the city, the political power of the city, to make a difference.
And is the recession an opportunity to change policy for the better in New York City? Tim in Baldwin has an answer to that question. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi. I think we have a red herring here. I've been talking about the salaries for the poor, because it's not the poor that's breaking the back of our taxation system and our infrastructure. It's the taxation on the rich. When that was changed and we dropped the 95% top marginal bracket, what we did was we shifted the entire burden for supporting the infrastructure that makes wealth possible to the middle class and to the poor. And by restoring it on the fractional percentile that makes that kind of like millions upon millions and billions of dollars a year, by restoring that percentile, we shift the entire burden back to where it belongs, that the infrastructure creates the wealth. Certain people capitalize on it. Like Willie Sutton, who had, the clearest answer to our problem. He robbed banks because that's where the money was. And that's why these people go there. And they're not doing anything wrong, but they're not being taxed appropriately.
And so, Tim, the state legislature just did pass an income tax hike on people making $250,000 or more. Are you saying they didn't do enough?
It's wrong-headed. $250,000 is still the middle class. What we need to tax is people making $1 million and $10 million, much higher than we're taxing them now. This still represents about 50% of the net gross national product, the people in that category.
So, Tim, let me ask you, and then I'll get our guest to respond. What do you think of Mayor Bloomberg's new budget proposal, which includes a sales tax hike?
That's completely regressive. It taxes the poor, and it misses the people that need to pay the tax. The point is that Mayor Bloomberg made his billions on the infrastructure, not because he's so much brighter or works so much harder than anybody else, and he didn't do anything wrong in making $1 billion. What we did wrong was not tax it appropriately because the infrastructure created the wealth, which he withdrew. But without the infrastructure, he can't possibly earn that kind. No one can.
And, Tim, I'm going to leave it there because we're running out of time, but thank you for all that. And, hey, Young Yoon, do you ever I'm sure you agree with him in principle, but what about the mayor's sales tax hike without an income tax hike at the city level? Is that an issue for you right now?
I mean, I do think that there is I think this is thinking about how do we approach this as a comprehensive solution to what's happening in the city. I don't think that changes can be done in piecemeal. I think we have to think about this is a real opportunity for us to look at what's been the impact of the economic downturn and recession, and what are the ways that we can actually think about different infrastructure building that's really going to support working people and their lives.
So
I don't think that just increasing sales tax is going to be enough or it's adequate to address some of the budget crisis that the city is facing.
So let me just go around as we're running out of time. And this One City, One Future report is out, and the One City, One Future conference that you'll all be at is taking place on Thursday. Catherine Wild from the Partnership for New York, you represent business at a conference that, as we hear, is being organized mostly by advocates for progressive politics. Where's your common ground with our other guests fundamentally and the various groups at this conference?
Fundamentally, it's that I think we are committed to a better, fairer city. We're committed to a strong economy, and that we want to have the most productive economy that we can have. And we agree with the point Mike made earlier. This requires a partnership with business, labor, civic, and community organizations.
So give me one piece of policy that you think you'll all cut, because business sounds like business is going to take a lot of rhetorical hits at this conference, and you may be wincing a lot on Thursday. Where are you going to come out with policy agreements?
I think we'll agree that the economic development policies of the past 30 years are failed policies, that they have not served deserve to create good new entrepreneurial companies and the jobs that go with them. I think we agree on the long-term importance of renewable energy and green-collar jobs for New York, although that will require first making sure we have employers, businesses in the private sector to provide those jobs. They can't all come out of construction. We've got to be creating new companies. But I think those are areas that we'll definitely agree on.
Mike Fishman from the Union 32BJ, same question.
I would say I would wrap it up as tax dollars should not create poverty jobs, that we should use our government policy to create good jobs through development, through incentives, through tax policy, and that it's in the interest of business and all working people to have that be the policy of not only this city but the country. And I think we are at a moment in time when people are ready to listen to new ideas, or maybe some new retreaded ideas, but that President Obama has really set the stage for us to talk about America and what America's promise is. And I think we can do that in New York City, and we have to use our economic power to do that.
Hey, Young Yoon, same question on the way out the door. There are so many different policies. The report is so broad, and it covers housing and wages and environment and, you know, the whole laundry list of things that affect the city. But are you going to come out with something on Thursday that people can really sink their teeth into and go forward and say, this is our number one goal?
I think our priority has to be in thinking about how do we redefine what's affordable in order that working people in New York City, along with other working class communities across the country, could actually have a higher and a better quality of life.
Hey, Young Yoon, Executive Director of CAAV, also known as Organizing Asian Communities. Mike Fishman, President of Local 32BJ of the Employees International Union, representing workers in buildings. And Catherine Weil, President and CEO of the Partnership for New York City. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, we will get your 30-second reviews of the new Star Trek prequel. And we will ask, what have you learned about real life from the Star Trek world? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll talk about some of the history of the first really gender and racially integrated TV series. Stay with us.